Well, happy Friday, y'all. I want to cover an example case that we were just working on. And this happened over like the last 6 weeks. So this was involving a business, a retailer. It was actually a gymnasium. And this business owner was being harassed by OSHA, an agency. This is in, I believe, Nevada. You'll see here, the person we're working with allowed us to publish all the information. So you're going to actually see the whole case file. But what I wanted to show you is that this is a good example of how a retail business can interact with an agency that's trying to impose these guidelines, okay, and that you don't want to participate. And here's how you can address these different issues. It's not just so limited to ADA or, you know, these types of matters. So let me switch over. I'm going to show you how this thing started. We're looking at, I guess, June of last year when it started, but let me... I'm going to show you here. All right. So here we have, the citation. So this is what they generally look like in each state. And the customer, all right, the business is going to be the fitness studio, okay? And you can see here there's an inspection number. Now I'm going to give you some detail as to what this looks like and what to look for when you see something like this. So if you're a business owner or you're just wondering how this stuff works, how do you deal with this situation? A lot of people just, they call an attorney and it really doesn't get you down the path where you need to go to solve the problem. So this is why I'm doing this video. This is how I've been doing this for a long time, and it's a little bit effective. I mean, sometimes it's not. It's a hit or miss sometimes. So I look at the documents that the person's been given, like the business owner. And in this case, I'm just carefully looking through here and I'm seeing there's some sort of ID. This has to do with probably the state. I don't know. This is from the state of Nevada Department of Business and Industry. You see who's doing the regulation here? You see who's interacting with the business, the retailer? It's not the Department of Health. It's an important note to make, because I believe if you look at all the statutes, you'll see that only the Department of Health or a local public health officer from your county has the authority to do these things. Sometimes the Department of Environmental Security can do that. But know who you're dealing with, because you'll understand what that agency's mandate is supposed to be. In other words, that agency has a limitation as to what it can do, how it can interact with you. For example, liquor licensing. They can't come in your business and cite you for not having swept the front entranceway. I mean, they have to talk about the temperature and the liquor and how it's stored and when you serve it and if you're serving it to only adults and things like this, okay? So it's important to know who you're dealing with. In this case, it's the state of Nevada, but it's actually the OSHA agency for the state. I like to call them a franchise of the United States OSHA. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, okay? So anyways, we just go through this, and look, it's a generic letter. Even though it's got the business name on here, it's still a generic form letter. So somewhere this is sitting on a computer somewhere, and they just enter this information and pop it out, okay? And they're talking about there's a violation. All right? So I'm trying to find out what the violation is. So that's why I'm reading this. I'm scanning this through. They're talking about minimizing employee exposure to possible hazardous conditions. The following information defines the types of violations. Okay, so they're just speaking generally here in this. It is a citation. It's not a flyer. Okay, it's a citation. So I'm still looking for that thing that was cited as a violation, but we're not there yet. So we see there's an issue of whether or not the violation is willful, how serious it is, if it's happened frequently, okay? And then we just get into all the different classifications. Did the company, did the business fail to change it, fix it? Okay. So now it's giving you instruction about if you're issued a citation, here's how you can contest it. It's telling you how to do that. Does it cite a statute in here? Nah, you kind of have to look that up yourself, because you don't want to take their word for it. Now, it does help to have instruction on these flyers. You do want to look up the statute, because there's lots more information. You'd be surprised. So I'm still looking through. I'm looking at all the different administrative aspects to this citation. Okay, here we go. So here's an administrative code. Okay, now administrative code is for the agency. It's not a law. It's just the way the agency operates or maybe interacts with whoever it's regulating. So just realize there is some sort of law that you have to go, ultimately a statute that you have to go look at, because we're dealing with a statutory creature that is the agency that's doing all this regulation, okay? So then you're talking about corrective action. Here's what has to be done. Here's what happens when you're assessed a penalty. And, you know, they're just talking about, you know, they're just going to tell you the fastest way to pay them because they said you violated something. They're not going to really try to help you out a little bit. You know, they just want to get the money as fast as possible. So so we just scroll through here. You can get a conference. Okay, this is known as an informal conference. That's known as an administrative hearing. You should be given that opportunity, okay? And that has to be given by notice. If there isn't that, it precludes that agency from going to court and taking any action against your business, okay, or you, okay? There has to be a hearing opportunity. So look for that. It does give you helpful instruction. We can get into more detail, but let me just go through this thing. So we got a lot of, you know, it tells you how to schedule it and this sort of thing. You have 30 days to contest a citation. So still, I'm looking for that citation. Here's how you contest it. All right. It's telling you what needs to be in your notice contesting it. And I'm going to show you what I did here. So you'll see how I put this together. Here's the process by which basically you contest it. Okay, so what you're really doing is you're being given access to an administrative hearing. And then we're talking about, you know, you're waiving that right to contest it if you don't do this. Notice how it's in bold and underlined, okay? And then this is if you submit to the penalty, this petition for modification of abatement date. So if you agree with the ruling or whatever, the citation, you just ask for more time to fix it, right? And this makes total sense. I mean, maybe there's something that happened on your property that's causing a hazard, and rightly so, the agency is going to come in there and do something that it's supposed to do, and maybe you need extra time to fix it. There's all kinds of reasons for that, okay? So this is really helpful. What's happening is, though, these agencies are taking illegal measures and they're pushing them into an old framework of statutes, and it doesn't fit because it violates due process. All these statutes are helpful, but they're trying to force something into this system without creating a set of laws to deal with it. Because if they create a set of laws like to make mask wearing required and impose penalties for not doing it, then it opens the law that would impose that obligation, if there would ever be such a law. It opens that up to scrutiny. It opens that up to that one attorney out there who will just tear it apart. He'll just take it right to the Supreme Court and have it overturned for being unconstitutional, right? So why risk all that when they can just use a patchwork of statutes and rules and scare people and get them to comply, right? So that's what's going on. So I'm scrolling through here. All right. And then a variance, you know, this is if, like I said, if there's something on your property and it's a hazard, and maybe there has to be an exception to it, okay? Maybe because it's not really a hazard, but maybe it's a hazard in some cases and maybe it's not a hazard in other cases. So you want to ask for a variance, and that's up to the administrative personnel to determine that. I'm not saying we should talk about that. I'm just telling you, you're going to see a lot of provisions in here, and I just want to go through this so you understand. This is not some gobbledygook. I mean, it's telling you what's going on, and it's giving you a direction as to what to do. And of course, they give you this standard, you know, stuff they do about employees and so forth. Okay, so here we get into another page. Now, I don't know if these came together. I'm looking here, it says page 7 of 13. So apparently, this person got 13 pages. So here's an abatement certification. Again, if you filled this form out, basically you're agreeing to the penalty, and you're just saying, I've already abated it. I've already fixed it. I've already changed the situation. The hazard doesn't exist anymore. And you're certifying that. So it's actually creating more of a liability, which is, there's another way to handle that. But anyways, I'm just saying this is what they're doing. They're trying to get you to certify that you corrected a hazard that one of the employees identified. And then, you know, we deal with employees on the matter and so forth. All right, so here is citation and notification of penalty. Are we going to get to it here? Oh, here we go, here we go. Citation, one item of one. The type of violation, it's serious. Here's the violation. The statutes, duties of employers, and every employer shall furnish and use such safety devices and safeguards and adopt and use practices, means, and methods as were reasonably adequate to render the employment and places of employment safe. Oh my gosh. Okay, so basically, if you're the premises owner or the responsible party, you got to make sure that the stuff you're using is safe. Okay. Notice, this is Nevada revised statutes. Okay, it's not an ordinance or administrative code or a policy or a guideline. This is actually a law. It does apply to businesses that are open to the public. It does apply to public accommodations. So what's happening here is they're saying that generally the violation is serious because the employer did not follow the requirements set forth in the Declaration of Emergency Directive. This is not a law. The employer does not provide or require employees to wear face coverings or masks, right? The employee allows the employees to wear a face covering if they want, but it's not required. Cleaning products provided do not meet the requirements of the EPA list. Deep cleaning is not conducted after hours. Okay, so this all has to do with the fake pandemic, right? So notice, what's the type of violation? We don't know yet. It just says it's serious. Still, they give all this gobbledygook. This part is gobbledygook. Okay, there's no legal duty here anywhere. All this 1, 2, 3, as you can tell. Well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's move down here. Maybe they're citing some sort of legal violation. Let's look. So here's the references. Declaration of Emergency Directive. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. So the employer did not follow the requirements set forth in Declaration of Emergency Directive. Okay, so this is what it's referring to, apparently. The Directive 021, dated May 29, 2020. Oh, yeah, here's another one. Nevada OSHA letter, updated guidance for essential business in phase one, blah, blah, blah. Roadmap to recovery. Yeah. Sorry, guys, those are not laws, okay? I don't even know what that is. So far, we do not see... We only see the word citation. We do not see the citation of a specific violation of a law. Not even is there described a safety violation. There is not even described an individual who suffered an injury because of the hazard. So, date by which the violation must be abated. So if we get to that point in the document, and it's already talking about the date by which the violation must be abated, June 29th, or else the penalty is going to be about $5,000. I still don't understand what the violation is. I don't see it. So let's keep on scrolling. So now we have an inspection date number, June. So apparently this, these policies or whatever were passed in May. So a month later, okay, so this was received about a month later. In the meantime, June 4th, whatever. Here we go, June 23rd, okay. Nope, June 4th to June 10th. So apparently someone came out there for that week just after the order came out and did an inspection, okay? So, company name, inspection site, type of violation other than serious. Okay, so this is citation 2, item 1. So basic requirement, they're actually citing OSHA. The employer did maintain a record of work-related injuries. Okay, so this is a regular OSHA inspection. Date by which violation must be abated, June 29th. There's no penalty. I don't understand what this is. So there's nothing here. Okay, so we're already citing OSHA regulations, Title 29. This has nothing to do with Nevada revised statutes. But anyways. And then we get to citation number 2, other than serious, employer did not develop a written hazard communications program, which again goes along with this insane guideline nonsense. And so this is what I'm thinking, okay, as I'm reading this document. I know it's tedious, but bear with me. Again, same business down here. And there is another phrase, citation and notification of penalty. I still don't see any violation of anything. There's no even description. There's no statute imposing, you know, or describing what would be a violation of anything, except to buy some Clorox disinfecting wipes. I don't know that that's ever, you know, isopropyl alcohol. If I don't do that now, that's a legal violation. You know, see, it's not here. So again, there's no violation. Now, notice who sent this. It was the district manager of the local OSHA. When I say local, I mean Nevada OSHA office that had to do with this person's business in this county. So this guy's name is Nicholas LaFrance, okay? So here's a bill. An abatement notice reminder and a bill. Now you owe $5,248. What are the citations? Do you see any citation of anything? You said a citation, it's serious. Another citation other than serious, for what? There's an inspection number. Okay. To avoid additional charges, pay it now, right? They try to get you to pay as much as the whole thing as fast as possible. And so they haven't cited a violation still. Now we're at June 23rd. Okay, so here we go, Nicholas LaFrance. And that's the end of the citation. Now, this is the entire set of documents that I looked at. And I guess this was in October. So I'm going to pop out of that frame. And I'm going to go into the next one. So what I did is I wrote a letter back. And I will go, I got to go over this with you. And this letter is available. You just got to ask. It might be available for download on the site. The site I use is aceofcoins.com/fakepandemic. So you see here, we got the business name. This is how I do it. You guys can do it how you want. I like to address it first and foremost to the individual who's involved here. Okay. Nicholas LaFrance, right? All right. I also like to address it to the director of the agency. So his boss. This is not really directly his boss, though. This would be, let's say, an office of the Department of Health that, in my estimation, has some supervisory role over this office. That's why I did it. Then I want to copy the Attorney General because that office is over all these administrative agencies. And I know the AG's office is participating in this disaster fraud, but I'm still going to copy the office because I want to serve notice on the office that, because it makes that office liable. If you don't tell the office, the AG's office, about a problem, then he can't be held accountable for it. And then I just sent it to the Department of Justice as well because it has to do with OSHA. By the way, it also has to do with CDC guidelines, okay? Which I'll get to shortly. CDC guidelines, okay? This is a federal question. It could be something very useful to understand. Okay, so I wrote this letter October 28th. I cited the inspection number. I probably included a copy of the citation, or at least the first page, just so there's a reference point there. And here's what we said. Please be advised that the studio is a private business. Okay, now notice, I use the same argument that these uninformed, erroneously informed retailers use when you come in there without a mask and they say, we're a private business and we can adopt any policies we want. Well, okay then. I know you're saying that, but then you're telling me in the next sentence that you have to abide by CDC guidelines. So either you can make whatever policies you want or you're subject to the law. And by the way, CDC guidelines are not law. So how is it that you can do whatever you want, but yet you're telling me you're subject to something that's not even the law? So I'm going to go ahead and use that same argument with the OSHA here in this situation. This duty is a private business. It can implement whatever policies it wants. It doesn't matter whatever rules you claim that might apply to it. We have a strict policy to never violate the medical privacy rights of our customers and to never engage in unlicensed activities, such as practicing medicine without a license. We want our customers to be healthy and safe, and suffocating them with an unproven and untested medical device against their rights to informed consent is the direct opposite of our reasonable duty of care. Duty of care is a special phrase. There is a duty of care. Imposing medical interventions does not satisfy the duty of care. In fact, it violates it. All right. So going on further. Now, this letter it's a long letter. I want to cover everything. Okay. And again, this is a kind of a form letter. I like to cover everything. You don't have to do that, but I always feel like it's effective to do that. I'm telling them also that your directive, okay, it fails to identify any emergency and it's not binding as a matter of law. Okay, that's the language I like to use. This is not lawfully binding, legally binding on me or anybody. The statute that you cited in your notice, it fails to identify any violation or any legal duty that has been breached by anybody. My business is not required to impose unsafe and untested medical interventions upon its customers. Now, we do know that there is testing and there are testing results from mask wearing and all this, and they're completely against those practices having any positive health effects. Okay, we already know that. Most of you guys watching this. Especially those which have been determined to be unsafe by longstanding OSHA regulatory safety standards. So I'm talking to OSHA, who's trying to violate its own standards. And I'm saying, guys, these are your own standards. See? If you can read that when I highlight it, I don't know. Okay. You will need to provide evidence. If you want me to do this, you need to provide evidence of the medical necessity. Why is this necessary? And the effectiveness. How is this going to be effective? How do you know doing these things will help people? Of these interventions and proof of indemnification for myself. If I'm going to violate people's rights because you told me if I don't, I'm going to be fined, well, you're going to cover me then. Because if one of my customers sues me, and he probably should, for me violating his rights, well, then why do I have to take the liability for something you told me to do? You're going to have to insure me for that. That's why we have bonding in the court systems, you know, posting bonds, because you pay in advance in case you damage somebody, then he can have a remedy. And that's what you're asking for. You want me to do these things, and it's not in my profession to do it, as you'll see in this letter. I'm not qualified. I'm really not insured. I never could be insured for doing it. And I'm not indemnified against the cost of litigation or losing to someone on $1 million claim or $10 million claim. My business cannot obtain insurance for the practices you claim we're required to follow. Will your division indemnify us against damages we might cause or cost the litigation from being sued by our customers? Of course not. Referring to the safety of people, how do your medical interventions satisfy the longstanding safety requirements under your own Title 29 CFR, okay, 1910-134? Who is designated as the on-site physician and who will pay the related costs for this? The reason why I mention that is because in that safety statute that OSHA has, it does require the supervision of a physician, a licensed physician, to apply or administer a medical device that restricts the airflow to your body. Now, some people will argue that it doesn't apply to these surgical masks. I think it does. So. I think you'll find that it does. You've only cited statutes that don't appear to pertain to this matter, which is what these guys do. In all the states I've seen this, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, Oregon, California, Nevada, there's a couple others. None of these statutes, Ohio, they don't apply. So, but I look at them anyways. I have to go look at them. I go look on the internet. I go look up I search on like the state name, the word statutes, and I search on public health law, and I also search on the phrase isolation and quarantine as much as I can to find all the statutes that pertain to this matter. Which regulation do you allege we violated? So still, even with those citations, there was no identification of which regulation was violated, okay? What fine imposes the violation? There was no statutes identifying the authority to impose a fine. Where did that number come from? I'm sure there probably is. It's probably in the administrative code, but it wasn't cited and it needs to be cited. Okay. How did you determine it was, you know, $5,000? Please cite the law that delegates legislative authority to the Department of Business and Industry of your or your division. Okay. That's who we're dealing with, right? So if you're not citing a legal violation, then how did you get the lawmaking authority? Because apparently you're acting like you have lawmaking authority. Please cite the delegation, right, from the department. When did the department give you the authority? It can't. I'll just tell you guys, okay? I'll tell you the ending real quick. It can't. The legislature cannot convey its legislative powers to another branch of government, nor can it convey them to a government agency, nor can the government agency confer its rulemaking powers to a private business. Now, here's where we get into the need for evidence. I asked, how have you determined or identified any specific person with a communicable disease or that has been exposed to, a toxic substance? I didn't put that in here right here, but that requires isolation or segregation or quarantine or other control measures permitted by law. So now my question assumes that there has to be someone who's identified as having some sort of hazard, right? A communicable disease. And it's true. There has to be. And the only way this would become an issue is if a physician has conducted a medical examination of someone and discovered that he has or she has a communicable disease and then traced that person's presence back to having been at that facility, that retail business, or maybe it's the business owner that has it, right? That's how, and then it would be reported to the Department of Health. That's how this all starts. It doesn't start from CNN scaring people on the 5 o'clock news the night before, and then now all of a sudden everyone's a direct threat to everybody on Earth. It doesn't work that way, okay? So that's why I asked this question. How did you establish someone as having a communicable disease that requires us to do something? Has the department obtained a court order? Are we past that point? Did someone already go through that process and obtain a court order? Because I'm not aware of it. And now some states I can do this and some states I cannot. Now this one you'll see here, I don't believe there's one for Nevada. It's the public health bench guide, which is all the rules and case law that helps judges make decisions in these matters. And all of those are really the public policy for the state. It tells the state how it's supposed to act and the agencies and how it's supposed to act. They're completely not following it, okay? So this is why I bring it up. Now, if like in this state, Nevada doesn't have one, well, I'm just gonna cite the title generically, you see. Let's see here. I have a footnote. Let me see if it has. Yeah, it might actually have something. So I should take that back. If I click this link, it might go there. You guys can do this. Yeah, it might. There might actually be a bench book for this. So that's kind of cool. But anyways, so you get the idea. So I want to refer to the bench book if I can. If not, I'm going to look at a statute. And it's going to be the public health law, basically, okay? And I'm going to find in there where it requires a court to review. There has to be court, judicial oversight, judicial supervision when they implement any of these practices. They can't just walk in your business without a court order. There has to be some order identifying someone with a disease that's connected to your business, and then possibly a court would agree to impose some sort of interventions, okay? And it wouldn't be these interventions. It would be something else. So none of this stuff is legal. Cite the law that gives your agency the authority to require a private business to perform medical interventions with no medical training, okay, or licensing or insurance. I'm not insured for this. How is this necessary? I don't want to read it word for word. How is it effective? Where's the proof? Assuming there is some communicable disease, okay? We get into the other issues. We're way out of our authority, okay, for everybody. We shouldn't be involved in these activities, all right? We don't have licensing. We don't have qualifications to do this stuff. Now, if my own doctor can't require me, and this is what this paragraph is basically saying, if my own doctor cannot require me to undertake a medical intervention, even if I'm going to die, even if it's imminent that I'm going to die, even if I'm bleeding to death on the surgical table and I'm conscious and he says, we have to do this thing. And I say, no, he has to obey. Otherwise it's assault. Ironically, if he saves my life, when I tell him not to use the medical intervention that would save my life and he saves my life, that's still assault by the physician because I didn't give my consent. So if that's the situation in that case, well, what about a physician who tells his friend, who's not a doctor, to force a medical intervention on yet someone else? Or better still, a government employee telling someone he doesn't know, let's say a private business owner, that he now has to tell someone who works for him to then tell someone else to adopt a medical intervention or else there'll be penalties. How can that be legal in any way? You see how simple this stuff is? So this is how I say it. What if the medical intervention you're purporting to require us to require of our patrons, you want us to require medical intervention? I've never heard of that before. What if it causes someone with a contraindicated health condition to collapse in our facility and we have to call an ambulance? Okay, this is called making a legal argument. You have to have a hypothetical situation. This is a close analogy. Will your department insure us against the related costs and liability? Does your agency have a budget allocation for this type of insurance policy under any legislative approval or statute? No, the answer is no, no, no. They will not have it. Why? Because there is no actuarial data that allows any insurance carrier on the planet to insure someone for this type of activity. Why? Because it's a similar situation where someone who has been previously convicted of arson, who just can't stop playing with fire, and he's out of prison and he's playing with fire at the mall. Nobody can have insurance for that. That guy can't get insurance in case he injures somebody. No one's going to cover it. That's the same thing that they're doing here. There is no coverage for this. That's why I ask them to show the coverage for this, because there isn't any. How are we supposed to force this, no matter what their conditions are, no matter who they are, without an examination first? Gosh, even my own physician has to conduct an examination first, right? Please describe the criteria by which you have determined there's a pandemic. If you sincerely believe there's a public health emergency and you have been claiming this for most of the year, but you've not solved it, isn't this an admission that you're incompetent and unable to end the so-called emergency? Why should you still be getting EUA funds, okay, from the emergency use authorization funds? If after a year you're still claiming emergency, emergency, but you haven't solved it yet. You see how I just brought that in there to make a point, and I put it in bold. It's not really needed to be mentioned, but I want the person who's reading this, if he reads this far, to just start thinking. What if the intended purpose of the medical intervention fails or results in the adverse health consequences? Will your department insure me or my business against any claims? We've already talked about this. I kind of repeat it over and over in different ways. I don't even have the capacity to do it. Now, here's something you guys want to check out. I'm going to put a pause right here, okay? All right. Under premises liability law, there's something known as duty of care. Duty of care means that a public accommodation is liable for different types of people that come onto the property. There's three general categories. One is a trespasser. There's still a minimal duty of care owed to a trespasser. Then there's the licensee. That's someone who comes onto the property, not for the purposes that the property's there, like a 7-Eleven, I'm going to go there and buy a Slurpee. No, I just came in to ask for directions, so that would be a licensee. He's owed a little bit greater duty of care. Like, for example, the floors should not be slippery with spills, right? Or if they are, someone should be cleaning them right away, and there should be a notice placed right nearby, okay? And then the person with the highest duty of care, that's owed the highest duty of care, is what's known as an invitee, someone who's invited. So here's who's invited to a grocery store. It's someone who's shopping for groceries, okay? It's a public accommodation. So the retailer public accommodation must provide a duty of care. Now, there's a limitation on this, and I'll just tell you what the limitation is. The duty of care does not apply when there's a danger or a risk that's widely known throughout that community. So, for example, let's say you're in a place where there's always fires, forest fires, and like in California, and they're trying their best to fight them, right? But there's smoke everywhere, and maybe people are getting sick from inhaling the smoke. Maybe it's so close and maybe you shouldn't even be there, but I'm just saying, this is a risk that's widely known to everyone in the community, okay? Any one business is not liable for protecting anyone else in the community because the risk is widely known and each individual assumes that risk. Now, if let's say there's a real pandemic with a contagious substance, pathogen or toxic material that's, you know, like orange gas floating through the town, right? Again, it's a risk that's widely known to the public and no one is responsible for protecting anyone. We're all on our own. Okay, that's how it works. But it doesn't work that way if the employees of a business are too lazy or understaffed and they don't clean up spills quickly enough, and someone slips and hits his head on a product rack or the freezer shelf or something like that. That's pretty serious, and that happens every year. Sorry to say, it does happen, and we do have insurance and things like that, and there's all kinds of liability, and I'm glad we have it. So that's what I'm talking about here. So we're asking the retailer, the public accommodation, describe the danger to which the department is empowered to act and protect the health of the public. It's not. It's widely known. Everyone assumes the risk. So even if there was a cloud of orange gas moving through town every day, everybody knows the risk. You know, we're all going to try to fix it, but, you know, not one retailer is responsible for this. Is there any health emergency, and what criteria did the department use to arrive at this conclusion? I've never seen it. Except if you just follow the news all the time, you would think that the news determines what constitutes an emergency, right? So please be further advised that if your department has received disaster relief funds, you might be subject to a disaster fraud investigation. I did not need to put that in there. Sometimes I like to be a smartass. But again, I'm just going to throw it all at them, right? I'm going to throw the book at them. That's what I'm trying to do. Has the local morbidity reporting office or medical examiner concluded that the morbidity rate of any communicable disease exceeds that of tuberculosis? So here's what I'm doing. I'm making an argument based on a well-known public health risk. Tuberculosis is serious. It will kill people. It has a high mortality rate between 6 and 36%, I believe. I believe it's in North America. It's that high. So that's never been determined to be an emergency. So what kind of numbers are we talking about here, guys? If tuberculosis wasn't, you see how you make that argument? You do not have to cite a law. You don't have to cite the CDC's website. What about cancer? What about diabetes? Are these stores required to protect us from diabetes? I wouldn't think so, judging by what they're selling us, okay? So what scientific evidence, et cetera? And now I'm getting into medical interventions. Epidemiological studies, FDA approved, right? I'm just getting into everything here. There's no one who's been identified as having a disease. We already know that. I get into the epidemiological experiments. Again, I don't have to answer. I don't have to talk about that. But the key element here is what I fetched out, okay, of the statute is that Chapter 618 of the Nevada Revised Statutes talks about all these conditions and the authority of the agencies, okay? So now I'm asking for a response. I want a response, and I want an answer to every question. You know they're never going to answer these questions. They can't. I want the answer by the date of December 30th. If you proceed with your interference with my business and continue to harass me and my employees or its customers, this will constitute waiver of any immunity, and I will sue you for the tortuous interference of my business, abusive process, and I will also sue you for being a nuisance, which I know a lot of you guys are experiencing if you're a business. They're trying to use the nuisance statute, okay? Just like they're trying to use the trespass statute on the customers. All right, so that's what I sent them. October 28th, it probably went out November 1st, something like that. So I gave him like a month to respond. So I'm going to jump out of here and I'm going to show you the response. So we got back. Here's their response. Now, of course, they didn't answer. Surprise. But here's what they did say. I'm going to spread this out here. Oh, it's outside the window. Sorry about that. I'm still learning how to use this thing. All right. So, based on our review here of the information you provided in your response to these alleged hazards, now these are hazards that they alleged, we have determined that our file on this matter can be closed and that no further action on this complaint is anticipated at this time. So then they go in with another threat and a little threat. Oh, you know, we might come back and do stuff. what they're saying here basically is, hey, you know, everything else is status quo. We might come in there and do some inspections, you know, whatever. It's all good. Now, notice who sent this letter back. Nicholas LaFrance, the same guy that we wrote to. And this is typically how it should go. I'm not saying it's going to happen every time like that. Now, sometimes you get these things in court. It takes a bit of a different strategy. I can share that with you on another video. I don't want to go too far on this one, but I just want to show an example of how you break it apart. Look at it carefully. What's the violation? Is it described? Is there a statute that's cited? Go read the statute. Go read the whole chapter where the statute comes from, and you'll find out at the very beginning what the purpose of that section of statutes is for, and then read every statute. Sometimes they cite a lot of statutes. What I found a lot of times, I think it was Illinois, I had one, all the statutes they cite were like 7 or 8 or 9 or something like that. None of them pertain to the matter that they were talking about. So I hope that does help. This video was about, it was actually for business owners, but it's, you know, great if anybody wants to look at this to understand more of the picture of what's going on here. Anyways, I'll make this available if you guys want. If enough of you ask, I'll probably put it up as a download on, here's what I'm using right now as a landing page. I had to move to BitChute. So if you look over there, the channel is under the name Singleton Press, just one word. And then my website, the page I'm using for contact information and resources is going to be aceofcoins.com/fakepandemic. All right. Hope that helps y'all. Have a nice weekend.